baby, what a play!
This is Jeff Fedotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, Mike Davidson joins former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio on our show. Now the curator of the Chiefs Hall of Honor, Davidson was the Chiefs equipment manager for 22 years. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, Jeff and Joe, thank you so much for allowing me to come on the show here and to talk to you here this evening. This is great. Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Well, Mike, it's a great honor to have you on. You were an incredible teammate. If anybody who watched us in the 80s, 90s, and in the 2000s saw how awesome we looked and how well-oiled that machine was, and it was all thanks to Mike Davidson. And, you know, your continuation of your affiliation with the team, Mike, is amazing. Just so everybody knows, Mike took me on a tour of the stadium recently for the Kimball Anders Hall of Fame game, and gave me the first, just kind of the first-hand tour of the new Hall of Honor, and it is amazing. So anybody who gets a ticket to get into that stadium and go and see it, you've got to see it. You've got to pay Mike a visit. It is absolutely amazing how it tells the history. And you and Bob Moore, Mike, have done a fantastic job preserving that legacy.
Well, thank you, Joe. And being the equipment manager with the Chiefs, it wasn't a one-man show. You know, it wasn't a one-person show. Alan Wright, Albert Vatia, who you may remember.
Sure.
Chris Shropshire. Kyle Crumbaugh, Darren Kearns, all the assistants that worked over the years with me, they were certain, like I said, it wasn't a one person show. It was a staff and a department that hopefully we did our job, that you all didn't have to worry about the equipment and you take care of business on the field, and we'll get you guys to make sure you get out on the field.
Well, Mike, here's something that's absolutely amazing and a testament to you, your leadership, and the legacy that you left in the equipment room. When I went back to, you know, it had been a while since I'd been back. You know, my last season was the 96 season. Mm-hmm. So it's been, you know, pretty long time since I've been there. So you'd expect there to be some turnover. However, you wouldn't expect there to be that much. But here's a testament to you and the amazing job that you and Alan have done in the equipment room. You, Alan Wright, Chris Shropshire, and Clark Hunt are the only affiliation that I have to that team from my last season in 1996. So think about that, Mike. You, Alan, and Chris, and Clark Hunt, the owner, who he wasn't technically the owner when I was there, was still Lamar, but nonetheless, he was, you know, part of the family, are the only four people that I have any affiliation with from my time after the 96 season. So I think that's a testament to you and the fact that you and you passed that legacy along to Alan and Chris, and everyone's still there and everybody else is gone. So I think that's really cool. And I wanted to make everybody aware of that, because I just think that's amazing. And it really is, like I said, I'll say it one more time, it's a testament to you and the legacy and the leadership that you brought to the organization.
Well, thank you. They, Alan and Shrop, little Chris are, little Chris just turned 50 years old.
Yeah, he's not little Chris anymore. You know, just
like, when did this happen, you know? But, they're good people and worked hard, still work hard, and dedicated, trustworthy, enjoyed working with them immensely, and still do on a peripheral vision now. Yeah.
Joe was in Houston this past week, and it was not to scout the Texans, but was for his day job, a work trip. Tell Mike and also the listeners the last time you were in Houston, because I'd like both your, you know, with the Texans game coming up, I'd like both your take on Joe the last time you were there. A pretty memorable experience.
I mean, I don't think I'll, it was probably the most exciting game, you know, to ever be involved with, coming into the House of Pain, Buddy Ryan's defense, the Houston Oilers run and shoot offense, Warren Moon. You know, we were probably, I don't know, Mike, we were probably at least close to being double digit underdogs going into that game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we squeaked by the Steelers. at home in overtime, and we head down to the house. They had won 11 straight games, Jeff, and we can't. Actually, the game speaks for itself. I think there's a lot of fans that know Keith Cash throwing the ball with Buddy Ryan, you know, the Joe Montana Black 58 Razor audible, you know, the Marcus touchdown that sealed the game. But for me personally, coming home to the airport. Now, Mike might have been on a different schedule because you have to understand that our equipment guys, they got it done, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were working 24/7 to get to and from and back and forth. So Mike may not have appreciated this as much as we did coming off of the jetway. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of fans at the airport at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were sitting up in the rafters of KCI Air, MCI Airport. So that's what I always remember. Cool. Mike, I'm sure you probably have your memories as well.
Yeah, and then Joe, if you remember, as you left the airport along the road that heads out towards the freeway, they were lined up. The cars were lined up along there, and people were getting out of their cars and cheering on the buses. So that was an exciting game going down there. And Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we had got beat by Houston earlier in the year. We were certainly underdogs. They were pretty much just gonna just mop us up out down there, but that was a very exciting time down there, and remember getting back up in the locker room, and remember the locker room was up on the second level of the old Astrodome. You had to go up those ramps to get up there, and we got up in there, and that was a lot of fun. And that was great for the city. It was great for the fans, and it was very special, and still is to this day.
If anybody who's listening and can't see us on the video portion, we're wearing the same outfit. And I just wanted to ask Mike, it's just kind of as a segue to what he was saying about going up and down those ramps. And Mike, give us a little idea of what it's like to get, 53 active players, a lot of traveling players, 20 coaches and staff. I mean, what's it like from the inside? Tell our listeners, like, getting a team ready for a game, not just like that Houston game, but any game, especially when you're on the road. I mean, what are the logistics like?
So just packing for an away trip, your process pretty much starts the earlier in the week, Monday, Tuesday. And you have your various trunks, et cetera, that have backups to the backups, and the equipment all for our team. The equipment all flies on the charter aircraft. So we get your travel bags packed up. So if we're going to leave on Saturday for an away game, Saturday morning we pack up the travel bags, get you guys to make sure we got everything in there for you. Probably between the athletic trainers, the video department, KCFX at that time, who was the radio station for us, they had travel trunks. We probably were traveling at that time, not including winter gear, around 16,000, 17,000 pounds of equipment underneath the plane. And then you charter with a trucking company in the city that you're going to. Everything goes on the charter aircraft. When you land in the city, the players and coaches get on the buses and go to the hotel. We take the equipment over to the stadium or the dome, depending on where you're playing, and go to the stadium on Saturday evening and set up the locker room so that when you all show up on Sunday, everything's set up, your lockers are set up, you guys, all you have to do is put on your gear and go play the game. And then when the game's over, you reverse it. You pack it all back up. You load up the equipment truck there that you're leasing with the trucking company, and everything goes back to the airport, gets loaded on the charter aircraft, fly it back to Kansas City. And then here in Kansas City, we have a trucking company that we contract with. They're at the airport waiting for us to take all our equipment off the aircraft. After we land back in Kansas City, the players and coaches, they go back, they go home. And we take the equipment back to the facility and unpack everything and begin doing laundry, putting everything back in the lockers. Depending on what kind of a game it was a rain game or snowy game, whatever, you might have to lay things out if they got wet on the sideline or whatever. But we go back and do several hours of work after we land, and then turn around and go back in the next morning and get ready for the next game.
Start it all over again. That's amazing.
a Monday night or a Sunday night game then? Do you guys just pull an all-nighter, or do you like what time do you guys like finish, and do you have time to go home, I guess, after that?
There's a lot of those night games on the road, especially if it's West Coast, or there's been on, you know, several between the athletic trainers and us, there's been several all-nighters. Maybe you go lay down on the athletic training table for a couple hours, or you just don't even go to sleep. You just go ahead and work through it, depending on what time you get back. And, you know, a night game out on the West Coast, you're not going to get back till 4:35 in the morning. And then you have 3 hours, 4 hours of work when you get back to put
that
things
away. That's amazing, Mike. And that's something that, you know, fans, sometimes their biggest investment might be, right, if it's a home game and they go 3-4 hours early and tailgate, the game is 3.5-4 hours, they spend maybe an hour in the parking lot celebrating a win, you know, you're looking at like maybe 10 hours, right? And or if you're watching it on television, it's 3.5, right? You grab your chips, grab your soda, grab your beer, you watch the game. Next game comes on 3.5 hours later, and you turn the television off. And I think it just, for me, I think it gives our listeners and fans who listen a perspective on from you know, right from your mouth, like what goes into it and how it's not just, you know, all these, well, I don't talk about those all white uniforms a lot because Jeff knows I wasn't a big fan.
We're going to get to that.
They weren't very flattering. They didn't make the linemen look too good. I've always felt like the Michelin man when I was wearing that. I know Grunny used to say the same thing, but it's just an incredible perspective, Mike, and what goes in to a game. And something you told me when I was out there, now that the facility is offset, right, where the full-time facility is, you know, down by the old practice fields, for me every game is an away game technically for the staff, right?
That's true. So even for a home game for us now, the equipment staff, the athletic trainers, it's an away game. So we, again, our training complex is on the other side of the parking lot down by the old practice fields down there. And so Saturday morning of a home game, if it's a Sunday game, load up an equipment truck down there, bring it up. Don't have to go very far. Just go up through the parking lot and down the tunnel. But again, you have to set up the locker room and just like it's an away game. And then when the game is over, you pack it all back up and all that needs to go back down there too. So it's an away game, even a home game, so to speak. You know, you're moving the equipment again. So, yeah. And you're talking about the white jerseys. I think it was it Grunny or Zot that used to say, we look like marshmallows.
It was both of those two knuckleheads. They love to get on you guys about those white uniforms. We all did, you know, the D-backs, the svelte linebackers, you know, they all look good in those all whites, man. You know, you start stuffing us guys into those things and, you know, our jerseys weren't small. I mean, they weren't like large, they were tight. Like, you know, we wanted to make sure nobody's grabbing our equipment and holding on to us. And man, I just felt like a sausage. I felt like, 10 pounds of sausage in a 5 pound bag in those white uniforms. Like,
was it Marty Schottenheimer? Did he like go to you and say, hey, we're going to do the white uniforms like the Browns? And then who was it? Vermeil? Was it Gunther who then said, okay, we're going back to the red pants. Take listeners through how that process went.
So when we came here, I came with Marty from Cleveland with the Cleveland Browns. I started my career in Cleveland with the Cleveland Browns in the equipment department when Sam Mattigliano was the head coach and Marty was an assistant coach on that staff. And Marty became our head coach in Cleveland halfway through the 1984 season. Then he left Cleveland to become head coach of Kansas City. And when we got here in 1989, we still had training camp up at William Jewell. Joe, remember that up there at William Jewell College? And we got up there and we were having in 1989, we were going down to San Antonio for a scrimmage against the Houston Oilers. And it was going to be about 185 degrees down in San Antonio on that when we were going down there. And I remember looking at the red pants that we had. And I said, look, I said, if we wore white pants, it might be a little bit cooler while we're down there for this scrimmage down in San Antonio. So that was our first trip as a Kansas City Chiefs, went down to San Antonio to scrimmage the Oilers. And Marty liked the all white. Now, we were coming from Cleveland, where we wore all white for home games in Cleveland, and we wore white on the road often also because home teams would normally wear their red jersey or their colored jerseys. So Lamar Hunt actually saw the white on white, and he said, you know, we haven't done that in a long time. He said, actually, in Super Bowl I, we wore all white. And he said, it's kind of a good look. And at that time, things were kind of changing, you know, had a new general manager, had a new head coach. And so we asked Clark what he, or we, I'm sorry, we asked Lamar what he thought, and he was all for it. We certainly got his permission to ditch the red pants and go with the all white. And then when Gunther became the head coach in 1999, Gunther wanted to change things up in his way and go back to red pants with the white jerseys.
That's great stuff. I didn't know the history of it and how Lamar was involved, how Mike himself was involved. Maybe Joe, you should blame Mike a little bit that you weren't looking for Slim those uniforms.
I'm gonna be texting Timmy. I'm gonna be texting Timmy and Dave Zott right now. So let them know. Hey, you remember all those times we talked about those white on whites? That was Mike.
But we looked like marshmallows. I'll never forget that.
Well, more with Mike Davidson in a second. But first, Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. Bet Online continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to Bet Online today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELEAV50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. We're here with Mike Davidson, not only the longtime equipment manager of the Chiefs, he's also the curator of the Chiefs Hall of Honor. Mike, I'm curious. I want your favorite, one of my favorite player growing up had his jersey and everything, Derek Thomas. I want your favorite Derek Thomas memory. And of course, now my favorite player now is an old man. Your favorite Joe Valerio memory from some of your days with the team.
Well, with Joe, I will tell you this, Joe, I'll never forget Steve Bono's run down in Arizona. And you got out in front of him. And you were waving them on like, come on. I just remember that play, and I remember how well it worked. And there was nobody in sight but you and Steve. And our sideline was absolutely just cracking up watching this, because the Cardinals had no idea where the ball was. And you were just waving Steve on. Come on. We actually have that video in the Hall of Honor. And it's awesome. It's great. Oh,
that's cool that's part of it, as it should be. That's very cool.
Yeah. So with Derek, I think the one story with Derek that's always kind of fun is he had a pair of shoulder pads he had brought from college from Alabama, and he wore them his first year, his rookie year, which he had very success with them. You know, he was rookie of the year and played very well. But we wanted to update his shoulder pads a little bit, just get them kind of bring them. Just they were small. He's one of the first players to really go to a small shoulder pad versus the old big shoulder pads that defense players used to wear. So we sent him to Power by Riddell, this company, and had him sent that pair that he brought from college after his rookie year, and had them remake another pair similar, but just beef them up just a little bit with some updated technology. So we got the shoulder pads back that off season, and Derek looked at them, put them on, went in front of the mirror, looked at them. He said, yeah, they're pretty nice, but I think I'm going to wear my other pads. And we're like, okay, that's good, you know. So we had him out on the workbench, and he'd come in and look at them. But again, the best fitting equipment is probably the one that they think is the best fitting equipment for him. So, you know, we didn't push him, but we carried the shoulder pads with us on the road, and we carried him in a sideline. And we went to Seattle, and there was a turnover. And Derek, defensive players are taught to go turn around and hit somebody, you know, and if you get a turnover, go find an offensive guy and go hit him. And I think Derek picked the biggest offensive lineman that Seattle had. And this guy absolutely knocked Derek into next week. Okay. I mean, Derek went flying, and he kind of gets up and he comes off to the sideline, and he looks at Allen and I, and he said, I think I'm ready for those new shoulder pads. We said,
That's
Derek,
great.
I don't think those new shoulder pads would have helped you. That
That's
guy
awesome.
Hit the heck out of you. So Derek is a great guy. He's so friendly. Good to everybody. Good to all our ball boys, all the young guys that help us at training camp. He was good to the assistants, anyone in the building, the custodians. He was just very good to everybody and brought a lot of energy. But it was just a good person to be around, a great person to be around. And to this day, I think the world of him and miss him dearly. Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah. And Mike, I mean, tell us about, you know, tell us, you know, for those who haven't seen it, you know, and they can maybe picture it in their mind's eye and the amazing job that you've done with, you know, with the Hall of Honor, and talk about the inspiration, you know, that you and Bob and everybody in the organization had for this and how you brought it to life and just some of the things that are in there that are meaningful to you.
Sure. Absolutely. I would love to, Joe and Jeff. So in the renovations of Arrowhead Stadium from 2008 to 2010, there was an original Hall of Honor put in, and it was nice. It wasn't climate controlled, but it was very nice. And basically, it told the story of Lamar Hunt, his history, his legacy, the American Football League, which he founded, as well as the AFL and his franchises. So real quickly, Lamar was raised in Dallas, Texas, and he loves sports. He graduated from SMU, where he was on the football team, and he graduated with a degree in geology. Did go to work with his father in the oil industry briefly, but he had a goal. He wanted to own a professional sport team. And what he did was, very simply, he went to the NFL to see if he, after watching the 1958 NFL championship game between the Baltimore Colts and New York Giants, and he thought he would ask them if they would expand the NFL. Now, in 1959, the NFL only had 12 teams. 10 were east of the Mississippi River, 2 were west of the Mississippi River. They weren't interested in expanding. So they did tell him that the Chicago Cardinals might be for sale. That was before they moved to St. Louis and on to Arizona. So Lamar flew down to Miami, Florida, to meet with the ownership of the Chicago Cardinals. Couldn't work out a deal to buy the team. And quite literally, on his flight back to Dallas, where Lamar was from, on his American Airlines flight, he borrowed stationery and started jotting down notes what it would take to start a new professional football league. And we actually have those notes in our museum space.
Oh,
Joe,
wow.
I think I showed you that. That was the start of what was called the American Football League. So he gets back to Dallas, and in 1959, in August, he had the first organizational meeting, and he had an 8-team league. Was going to have 6, but he added Buffalo and Boston within a 2-month period. And in 1960, at age 27, he launched what was called the American Football League, or the AFL. Today, we know that as the AFC. Lamar's franchise was in Dallas. They were called the Dallas Texans. It was a pretty good deal for him, except what happened was the NFL saw this as competition, so they did expand. And remember, they just told him they weren't going to expand. So they added 2 teams, the Minnesota Vikings, who were one of Lamar's original 8 AFL teams. They bailed out on Lamar at the very last minute and didn't start till 1961. The Oakland Raiders actually took the Vikings' place in the AFL. Mm-hmm. The NFL added a second team in 1960 and put them in Dallas, called them the Dallas Cowboys. And basically, it was just to get competition. They didn't want Lamar's new AFL league to survive and trying to drive him out of business. So basically what happened was, after 3 years as playing as the Dallas Texans, they weren't being supported very well. Neither were the Cowboys at that point. So Lamar was going to have to relocate his franchise. And in May of 1963, he relocated his franchise to Kansas City and renamed the team the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's how they ended up in Kansas City after 3 years as playing as Dallas Texans. So our museum space that we have, our Hall of Honor, it recognizes not just the Kansas City Chiefs, but the Dallas Texans, and more importantly, the American Football League, the AFL, which now is known as the AFC. Lamar always wanted to be known as the founder. He never wanted to be known as an owner. He was the founder. And he was very proud of those other owners that took a chance with him when he launched this new football league. So when you come into our Hall of Honor, you will see all 10 because Cincinnati and Miami were added in that 10-year period as expansion teams. All 10 teams are honored from the AFL. And Lamar was very proud of those owners to have taken a chance with him. So we have the American Airlines stationery. We have some documents in there. As part of that merger, which Lamar was involved with, the merger of the AFL and the NFL in 1966, as part of that merger, they decided they were going to play an AFL-NFL championship game, which Lamar just kind of kiddingly referred to as the Super Bowl, based on this little toy that you see right here called a Super Ball. Okay. And that's how the Super Bowl got its name. So we have a little story about that. And we have a document where Lamar wrote to Whammo, who makes this toy, saying, "Yes, I got the name Super Bowl based after your little toy called a Super Bowl." We also have a document where Lamar suggested they add Roman numerals. After the fourth Super Bowl, he noticed they were calling it Super Bowl I, Super Bowl II, Super Bowl III, and he suggested that they add Roman numerals to it to put a little class to. Lamar always thought this was kind of a funny name, Super Bowl. He just thought it wasn't very classy. So that's when the Roman numerals that Lamar suggested they add. But one of the most important documents that we have in our document case is in August of 1970, Lamar got word that Vince Lombardi, the old Green Bay Packers coach, was very, very ill. And he wrote a very personal, private letter, compassionate letter to the commissioner, Pete Rozelle, suggesting they rename the Super Bowl trophy the Vince Lombardi Trophy. And Joe, I think I pointed that out to you when you were there. Yeah. It is one Amazing. Of the coolest things that we have. In addition to the Lamar Hunt section, we have a section on our inductees in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. We have a Origins in Dallas. We have the AFL-NFL rivalry coming to Kansas City, the merger. We talk of all our championship trophies from the 1962 Dallas Texans AFL Championship, the 66 Kansas City Chiefs AFL Championship, the 1969 Kansas City Chiefs AFL Championship, as well as Super Bowl I, which the Chiefs played the Green Bay Packers and got beat, as well as Super Bowl IV and Super Bowl 54. We have championship cases that have all those trophies and that story all detailed out. We also have a section from the Renaissance years, Joe, which talks about Marty mm-hmm. and Derek Thomas and Joe Montana and J.J. Burden and Will Shields, Trent Green, Dan Salamua, Marcus Allen. And then over on the other side, we have all our busts from our Chiefs Hall of Famers. And if you go in there, we have the bus on both sides. They're flanked on the east end and the west end, as well as a touchscreen where you can pull up each one of those inductees, and we tell a story about them. Bob wrote all the copy for each one of them. It's absolutely, it's great. It's a great honor.
Tremendous.
And you have photos. We have video. In addition, we have another touchscreen that tells every game that we have ever played in our history. If you touch on that, it will bring up the score, where it was played, and also who scored in that game. In addition, we took and have some standout games. So the ones that really stood out over others, you can click on that, and you can find yourself looking at some highlights from years back of different games. And I believe we have Joe on there with his leading Steve Bono down the field. At the other end, we have every player that's ever been on our roster. And again, it's a touchscreen interactive. You touch on it. Joe, I showed you that when you were there. And
yep, amazing.
You click on every player. And in some cases, there's a video attached to that player. And then we also have touchscreens that talk about the history of the American Football League. So along with the big LED boards that have highlights of Super Bowl IV, Super Bowl 54, we have highlights of previous games here that we have played this season, as well as we have Kimball Anders, who was inducted back in November. We have a little highlight on that. So it's very interactive. And if you come to a game, it's not an extra charge. It's not a separate fee. If you bought a ticket to the game, you can come into our Hall of Honor and tour it. You can also have private tours, public tours, which we have on Friday and Saturdays. And it talks about Lamar Hunt, his history, his legacy, the American Football League, not just his team, but all the teams, as well as our Chiefs and Texans and Chiefs players over the years that are in our Hall of Fame, as well as every player that's ever been on our roster, we honor in there. Yeah. And then we have 10 display windows, that also from each era, from the 60s, we have Chris Burford. We have Ed Podolak honored in there. We have Art Still, Duron Cherry, Tamba Ali, Derek Johnson, Jamal Charles, and of course, Travis and Patrick. And we also have a special exhibit on Lynn Dawson.
Mike, I would suggest to fans, honestly, well, number one, the reverence that they approach this place with, it is immaculate. Like, you can just tell that it's in the middle of a stadium. You would think it was in the middle of the Smithsonian Institute, this, the way that people take care of it. It is immaculate because the fans have such reverence for it. And that's, I think, a testament to what you and Bob have done and how they feel about the Hunt family and the organization. I would buy a ticket to the game, not even to watch the game, but to get in to see the Hall of Honor. I'm serious, Mike. It is amazing. And to any listener or fan that listens to our podcast, you've got to check it out when you're there. If you haven't already, it's absolutely amazing. And you know, getting this great insider's tour from you, Mike, I think will give our listeners even a better perspective on what it's like. So thank you for that, for keeping the legacy alive, because I think we get caught up in these, you know, as fans today, and Patrick and Travis and all the current players, and players or fans sometimes forget about the players and the history that's there behind the organization, and especially the genesis of it. And you've done a great job of telling that story, my friend. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Joe. And you know, obviously, you know, Bob has such a history with the franchise also, and his knowledge and his writing skills, and then of course having the support from Clark and the Hunt family to be able to have this opportunity is it's an honor. It's truly an honor.
Well, we've got to have you back on too, Mike. We've got to have you back on to tell more stories about this. Our listeners are loving it. So thank you so much.
Good. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That was Mike Davidson, the curator of the Chiefs Hall of Honor, also the equipment manager for the Chiefs for 22 years. Hey guys, this is a lot more interesting than talking about the Texans for sure with the Chiefs favored by 14. Well, we'll be here next week to wrap that up. And if you enjoy this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.